But anyway, I'm just so glad you settled the case because I didn't want to go back to jail. And I told the cop the reason I was driving so fast.
Good evening, everybody. David, we settled the case with you going back to jail. Didn't you understand that?
What?
That next week they're going to...
That's not what you said!
Oh, I'm sorry, folks. It's time for us to get started here. We're going to have to continue our attorney-client privileged conversations later. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our June Sessions podcast. Let me start by introducing everybody. Most of our panel back tonight. Let me start to my left on my screen, at least, with Matt Sikowski back with us. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
Hello, guys. I'm having a better night than Henry Ellenson so far, but...
Yes, we are recording this, thanks for mentioning that, here on Thursday night, June 23rd. The NBA draft is going on right now, so there is a little bit of basketball news out there. Also with us, John Tytel back again. John, how are you?
Good. I've not been drafted by the Celtics yet, but they still have 7 picks remaining, so we'll see how the night goes.
We may have a star here. John Slica back with us as well. John, how are you?
Looking forward to the end of the academic year, as it were, but at least one team is making a notable swan song as they get set to leave the Big South and Coastal Carolina, albeit in another sport.
Another thing going on as we are recording this. In fact, Coastal Carolina playing right now in the College World Series out in Omaha. Again, a different sport, though. And somebody that is a sport in and of his own, David Griggs. David, how are you?
I'm doing great, and like the rest of the country right now, I've got college basketball on my mind.
Of course.
So I'm glad we have this podcast.
We just have a few days left until the next season starts, too, correct? That should be on our website. It's we're just down to... if we can...
What's the countdown? If I haven't...
I have no idea, David. Maybe you could tell us, actually. We're trying to get that up here, but... here we go. We only 140 days, 15 hours, and 51 minutes left to the start of the next season. So we're fast approaching. But anyway, we've got a lot of things we do want to go over. And as I mentioned already, tonight is the NBA draft, and I thought that'd be a good place to start. Not so much the NBA draft itself, because quite frankly, as far as I go, at least. I have no idea what the NBA even is. I think that Steph Curry is the kid that used to play for Davidson, and I've never heard of LeBron James. But some people out there do know what the NBA is. And the effect that it does have on college basketball, obviously, is when the underclassmen go out early. And there were, this year, I believe, 116 college underclassmen that initially declared. 57 withdrew their declarations. But we still had a lot of underclassmen that hired agents and went out. And I want to just kind of go through each of you here and see if there's any names that you want to throw out there, guys that really making an impact or surprise you that they went out or surprise you that they decided not to go out. And John T., you are our NBA draft expert, so I want to start with you here.
So in terms of not surprised they went out, obviously the top two guys, the Super Frosh, Ben Simmons from LSU, Brandon Ingram from Duke, they went 1 and 2 respectively. They're going to have great NBA careers. They're going to get paid. I think they made the right move. It seems like everyone else in the lottery except for Buddy Hield is an underclassman. As long as they get picked in the lottery, it was a good decision. If they slide farther down, maybe not. As far as who stayed, a couple guys out west, Ivan Rabb stayed at Cal. Alonzo Trier stayed at Arizona. On the East Coast, Grayson Allen stayed at Duke. I expect them all to be in the tournament next year as they were last year. We'll see.
And Matt, I mean, a few other guys that pulled back that had originally gone into the draft, I believe that pulled back, guys like James Blackman from Indiana, a couple kids from Villanova there, Chris Jenkins, Josh Hart, and maybe one of the bigger names who is now transferring, also Malik Newman from Mississippi State. Is there anybody there that surprised you that they decided to get out of the NBA draft, or do you think it was just good decisions across the board?
Yeah, I'm in Malik Newman's case, I'm surprised because clearly he was not happy at Mississippi State, is leaving, but now is basically 2 years away from the NBA because unless scouts find him in 1 year stop wherever he is, in that, like Ricardo Leto in Providence, otherwise his year sitting out, that means 1 more year he's away from going pro. And in his case, it's one of those just go play pro basketball, even if it's not in the NBA for a few years, go earn some money. I think he's good enough and has enough reputation to probably make six figures overseas. And now is 2 years away from maybe being an NBA first rounder.
Yeah, another name, John asked, you being the Xavier guy, Trevon Blewett from your school that initially declared and then pulled out. That would have been a mistake for him to pull out this to go to the NBA at this point. Do you agree?
Well, let's not forget, this was the first year where you were allowed to keep your name in the draft for more than just a week past the end of the regular season, so I think this was just a matter of Blewett and several other players just trying to figure out where they stood as far as their NBA stock. I think Xavier fans probably were expecting he would leave after the end of next season, but I guess the expectation is that he and possibly Edmund Sumner, depending on how well he plays, are probably going to be leaving for the draft after the 2016-17 season.
Yeah, and we all like that rule, don't we? I know coaches don't like it because it could potentially make it harder for them to manage their rosters, but it's good for the players. And it's odd that something happens that's good for the players. We like that rule, don't we? That you can stay in there longer, test the waters.
Oh, absolutely.
I personally like it. You see, guys that were some pretty big names. Another name I didn't mention, Melo Tremble from Maryland, is a guy that decided that tested the waters but didn't go out. On the other hand, you still had, I think, guys that really shocked me that they did decide to go out. Maybe they're going to get drafted. I don't really know where people are standing in terms of first and second round of the NBA draft, maybe John T. But guys like Cat Barber from NC State or DeAndre Bembry from St. Joe's, trying to think of a few other names here, a guy like a Kay Felder even from Oakland that all went out and stayed out. Is there any sense to that for some of these guys?
Yeah, I'll speak to the Cat Barber one. He was probably playing off the ball next year because they got a really good freshman point guard coming in named Dennis Smith, who I think was at least get the point guard keys from day one.
I thought it was because of something I said about NC State back in February that Barber wanted to get out of town. I was actually going to throw out Isaiah Whitehead because I think he's also staying in the draft, so he's not going to be coming back for Seton Hall. Although they're still going to have, I think, four very talented juniors coming back for an experienced Pirate team next season.
Well, John T., being our draft expert again, is there anybody that just shook your head at and said, this is just ridiculous, why did he stay in the draft?
I mean, expert's a strong word. I've only gotten five of the first nine right on the money. But as far as guys coming out, I think that Bembry is actually going to get drafted late in the first round, hopefully before we're done tonight. He was a junior. He made it to the tourney. He had a great season, a great career, actually, at St. Joe's. I'm surprised by a lot of the young big men. There's a ton of freshman guys, Jake Diallo, Steven Zimmerman, a bunch of Diamond Stone, a bunch of big young guys who obviously the NBA likes size and upside and potential and length and all those adjectives that Jay Billis loves. Some of them are going to slide to the second round, and maybe they'll make a good career out of it, but I think unless you're guaranteed a first-round pick, which it's hard to get a guarantee, it's such a risk, even as a 6'11 or 7-footer who was a McDonald's All-American, it's a huge risk. So I hope these guys get picked.
Well, even the second round, there's 60 picks in the NBA draft. There's about 60-some underclassmen, plus you got to throw in the international players, the seniors, guys like Buddy Hield, who's already been drafted tonight. There's guys that will not get picked by anybody that left college early. And I, for one, just don't get that.
I think that it's just amazing at how many people there are in college basketball giving and receiving very bad advice. I think these people aren't realistic about how good they actually are, and somebody gets in their ear and reaffirms that, you know, misconception or misbelief, and so there's that, and then there's a combination of, like, you know, just kids not being happy where they are, and they want to get out and move on, and they think they have a chance. And even if you're not drafted, you could still potentially make a roster or have the chance to play somewhere. But you just want to see, like, a lot of these people, it's just, what are you doing?
Well, another key is going to be who's going to be drafted in the first round, because that's where you're guaranteed a contract for a few years. Nothing is guaranteed if you're drafted in the second round.
Right. I mean, Isn't it almost better, or I would think it is, to go undrafted rather than be drafted in the second round?
John T, Matt, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's better to be undrafted, pick out a team you can maybe study the depth chart, see where, or if they have maybe like a lot of money committed to veterans, say, okay, maybe they'll take a young guy on.
Well, the other way that we're seeing people, kids that we did not expect to leave the schools, leave them besides declaring early for the NBA draft and staying in the draft, obviously is transfers. And this is a ongoing, what I call almost a problem here, because we're just seeing so many transfers these days. Way more than we saw 10, 15 years ago.
It's upwards of 500 now, isn't it, Chad?
I tried to take a look at the list before we came on just to go through it, and I just got so fed up. I ended up just focusing on three or four of the top ones. The big news this week, of course, is Derek Thornton now said he's not only is he leaving Duke, but he's going to be transferring over to, is it USC or UCLA?
USC.
USC. I thought it was USC. I'd written down UCLA. Another one, Jordan Matthews has declared he's going to be leaving Cal. We've heard whispers of Gonzaga, though I don't think he's declared yet. We mentioned Malik Newman already. Charles Matthews from Kentucky going over to Michigan, that was announced. Is there any – let me start with you, John S., actually. Anything there that really surprised you, how you think that these will affect the upcoming season?
Well, I think the notable one, as you mentioned, was Thornton, because at least it gives the Trojans a somewhat serviceable player in a couple of years, because they've had a couple holes because of players either leaving for the NBA draft, or I think one of their players is going to be a graduate transfer headed to Marquette for the following season.
Right. And David, in addition to that, we also have some of these transfers that are coming in from that set out last year. I mean, if we're going to talk transfers, we should talk about them. One of the most notable ones, Austin Nichols, who will now be playing for Virginia last year. I know our colleague Joby isn't with us here tonight, but he might be a little excited about that.
Yeah, and he'll be an impact player right away. It's interesting, and I know that this probably isn't the case with anybody you mentioned, Jed. I actually think the year of residency increases the number of transfers, because most of them, more than half, certainly not all, and certainly not some of the major ones you mentioned. The reason kids transfer is because they're run off. A coach basically implies that they're not going to be a part of a team, or they're not going to be a key part of the team, and kind of shoves them out the door so they can recruit over them. So that's why I think you'd actually see the transfer rate go down if maybe you didn't have the year in residency rule where you have to sit out a year. Basketball, I think it's over 40% of players end up transferring or not graduating from the school that they ended up enrolling in as a freshman. That's way, way higher than any sport that doesn't have that rule. Whereas Austin Nichols probably doesn't fall into that category, I think when you see like over 400 pushing 500, now over 500 transfers a year, more than 300 of them are probably being run off.
Well, John T., do you agree with David there that this is a problem with or that people are being run off? Is it a problem? Is it not a problem? What is your thought on just the massive numbers of transfers we have?
It depends on how you look at it. My heart says it's a problem. It's because I want people to pick the school they want to go to for college and then ride it out for 4 years, enjoy it, make friends, learn things in school, the whole package of being a college student athlete. My head says that it's the right move if you get somewhere and then the coach gets fired, or somebody leaves early, or a recruit comes in after you who's better than you and you got to sit. Like, I understand you're there to make the best out of your situation. I wish people would stay longer, but I understand the motivation to leave.
Matt, do you think that we should just get rid of the one-year red shirt season there? Did we lose Matt?
Matt, you there? He's frozen. He doesn't know what this is.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I can hear you guys.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome back, Matt.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, the one I would say much on this is, I look actually an interesting one at the Martin West level, Nevada, bringing in the Martin twins from NC State, and then Kendall Stevens, a really good shooter from Purdue who lost his shot this past year, But with the year sitting out, he regains his shot. He was a 40% three-point shooter before this. That could be real interesting to see what Nevada does now under Eric Musselman.
All right. Thanks. John S., let me throw the other question over to you there. Do you think we should get rid of the one-year sit-out rule?
I don't think it's really helping the game, to be honest with you, when you look at some of the other sports that really have much more lax transfer rules, and you could probably argue that it's because of that they don't have as high of a transfer rate, but that's just my opinion right there.
All right, well, let's move on to one other subject here, a couple other subjects here that we want to hit tonight. And Matt, let me throw it back over to you again. Before we get into the next college basketball season, we know the NBA season is over already. We are going to have basketball this summer in terms of the Olympics, as a group of NBA players go and completely destroy some players from other countries. But it does have a little bit of college basketball, as Coach K and Jim Boeheim are going to be leading the way there for USA basketball. But I don't think we're going to have any college players on the team this year. Is that correct?
Probably not, although the way some of these NBA players are pulling out, we might be getting fairly close at some point. But, see, like, there's still really good players committing. I see, was it Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, DeMar DeRozan? Some very good players, good NBA players, probably right on the borderline all-star level. But this might be like 2004, where a lot of big names set out and then... Who knows? I'm not sure if there's another Argentina out there on the world stage with a Manu Ginobili in his prime, but...
So David, do you think USA basketball doesn't win the gold?
Without knowing anything about any of the other national teams, no, I don't think there's any way they don't win the gold. We just seem to dwarf everyone. Even in the years we don't care, we still medal, so...
Right. Anything else that you're looking forward to with the Olympic basketball tournament? John T., let me throw that over to you.
John, you'll have to unmute yourself, man. Sorry about that. Up at the top.
There we go.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing who's actually in the Olympics. I always assumed, frankly, that it was determined like months, if not years, in advance. So the U.S. is in Group A against Australia, China, and Venezuela, but the two other members of Group A have not yet been determined somehow. This is surprising to me. There's Olympic qualifying tournaments next month. So imagine, obviously the U.S. doesn't have this problem because they keep winning and keep getting invited back. Imagine that your country where you live or that you root for is qualifying next month in July to play in the Olympics in August. Like, it goes right down to the wire. It makes it for an exciting tournament and stuff, but I'm surprised that, like, they don't know who exactly is in the Olympics yet.
Yeah, I believe there's three spots that are going to be determined next month in a bunch of qualifying tournaments. It is a little bit strange. I think all the other sports have their fields, that sport where they kick the ball around. I don't even know what it's called.
Olympic soccer, there's qualifying for it. I don't know how exactly it works, though.
I know the U.S. always nearly misses out, it seems like, or at least the last two times.
Well, yeah, because we use college players, and they're not very good.
Yeah. I was going to say, as far as basketball and other sports go, it's not just a matter of who's going to be staying and who's is going to end up playing, but I think there have also been concerns because of Zika virus and who's going to be going to Brazil and who's not going to be going. I guess depending on who you listen to, the Zika virus seems to be down a bit as compared to where it was a couple months ago when it was much more of a full-blown health crisis. That's something else we're going to have to monitor when the Olympics begin in August.
Yeah, and I guess at some point they got to announce what their roster is, probably in the next month or so. I don't think they can wait until the last minute, but I'm not as versed on Olympic rules as maybe others are. But
I think ESPN is also reporting tonight LeBron James is going to be out, Carmelo Anthony is going to be in, and I think they were also saying about a week earlier that Stephen Curry is probably going to be sitting out for the Olympics, but that's not confirmed yet.
Let me get your take on this, because I would prefer that since there is a FIBA World Championships, there is a World Cup of Basketball for pro players. I kind of wish that we would see that as our professional World Championship and just send college players to the Olympics. That would be my preference. I know other countries send pros, but oh well, let's send our college players up against their pros and see how they do.
That would at least make the tournament fairer, I think.
Yeah. Thoughts, anyway.
But let's move on to a few other topics here. And John S., let me throw this over to you. I know you brought this up before we went on the air. The situation over in Baylor here, where obviously they've got issues with going on with the Big 12. Do you want to discuss that at all?
Well, this started because of the football program having to fire Art Briles as well as their president, Kenneth Starr, and I think there was one other university official, I think it was their athletic director, that also had to resign because of how they were handling sexual assault cases. It's gotten bad enough to the point where the Big 12 is now asking Baylor to answer as to what's going on, because there's probably going to be, I think David knows this better than I would, probably some Title IX violations as well as who knows what else they've been sweeping under the rug. This is just what we know so far.
Yeah, David, let me turn it over to you. I mean, this is on the coming, you know, it's been a little while, but I mean, after Baylor basketball with the whole Dave Bliss fiasco,
God.
Now again the same university in trouble again.
When Baylor screws up, they go all out. I mean, it is amazing to the, like, degree that they take things. 10 years ago, we've got Dave Bliss covering up murders and drug and trying to make it look like that it was a drug deal and all this other crazy stuff. And now we have this. Now, to be honest, I'm not quite sure on all the specifics, but essentially Baylor did not really have a sexual assault policy or mechanism in place that effectively dealt with it. And in the case of athletes, they did. I mean, like John said, they just kind of swept it under the rug. The Big 12, with it being a private school and with it not being, they have access to what's public, I guess, through the police and whatnot, but that's very limited. And the Big 12 is inquiring more into it. Now, I don't know what they intend to do with it or whatever. I don't know if... I don't know if they've even reported anything to Title IX violations or if the others have complained, but it sounds like more, you know, I think somebody else came out this week and said that she was a survivor or a victim of it. It's just a big mess, and you just hate to see that. You hate to see, like, first of all, that happen. You hate to see a school not in a position to handle it because they either don't know how or just choose not to, and then in handling it, they cover it up. I mean, it's actually kind of despicable.
I mean, this is a much, much more serious situation than what we saw at SMU back in the 80s when we had administrators and the president just covering up a payroll for their football team.
They were covering up cheating. They weren't covering up anything that was, I would consider, of a felonious nature.
Well, let me, John T., let me throw this over to you. We'll take we'll get the mute button off of you there. But like John S. just said here, we had a death penalty basically at SMU back in the 80s. With what's going on in Baylor, should that be the type of thing be considered?
It should certainly be considered. I mean, they're taking it very seriously at Baylor by getting rid of Briles and undergoing policy changes and cooperating, as far as I can tell, with the NCAA. It's a serious step, obviously, that changed the face of your program, but I think John S. is correct. Like, if you're going to penalize somebody for some money this much, why don't you penalize someone for felonious criminal whatever stuff even more? Like, I get it.
Matt, another university that's having its own issues was Louisville, which we discussed a lot during the course of the regular season, but now the president has stepped down there at for the Cardinals. Is there something serious going on here too as well? Do you think there's going to be some more fallout?
Yeah, I am a little surprised that Pitino did not look for a soft landing this offseason, although there probably weren't that many out there, but even say somewhere like UNLV, he could have gone and maybe, okay, we're done with what happened at Louisville. UNLV would probably take him with open arms. You'd taken a big paycheck reduction, but then again, $2 million is better than the zero he might be making a year from now. So,
David, you think Pitino's going to keep his job?
Yeah, I think so. Now, I do find it a little curious that Louisville still has not received, at least as far as I know, a notice of allegations at all. Like, so you don't really know if it's over or not. As you recall, we were pretty upset about this last year because they had the self-imposed postseason ban, and it appeared to be that they were doing that to sidestep any long-term consequences. You know, the athletic year's over. They're starting next season with the same roster they would have anyway, and it's probably all behind them. Now, a lot – this is more just some internal turmoil. The members of the Board of Trustees were basically fighting among themselves. There were those that supported the university president and those that didn't. And essentially what ended up happening is that the governor of the state, and this is a very abbreviated version of this, appeared to be fed up with how the board and the president was acting, and he's basically rebooting. I think out of the 13 board members, he fired 10 of them. He asked President Ramsey to resign. And now there's no board and really, I guess, no acting president, or at least not one for the long term. And who knows how this is going to be restructured. The way the Board of Trustees works at Louisville, they are appointed by the state governor. It is a state university. I don't know who those positions will go to. I don't know who they'll hire as president. I don't know how the president will handle this with athletics, or, you know, if maybe they keep everything exactly it is, or maybe the new president comes in, says he's embarrassed about the whole thing, and he reboots the whole department. I just don't know.
John S., I'm showing to you one other subject we wanted to get to here. I know, at least on our primary list of topics for tonight, was some upcoming renovations. Not as sad of a news. I guess it's actually good news. A little more upbeat ending here. But Syracuse and Cincinnati are both announced some facility renovations. Give us a little update on what's going on there.
Okay, my understanding with Syracuse is the Carrier Dome is going to be undergoing some renovations starting this upcoming year, but their football, basketball, and I think lacrosse teams are still going to be playing their regular seasons as scheduled. Cincinnati, on the other hand, is going to be playing one more year at Fifth Third before they start to undergo renovations in their place, which means they'll probably have to go either to U.S. Bank Arena downtown, or they may have to go across town to either Xavier or Northern Kentucky to play basketball for a year. The Cincinnati Gardens is not going to be an option because that building is going to be torn down in a couple months from what I've heard recently.
I can't see them playing on Xavier's campus. I don't know. It's I think that would be a bad idea.
It would be bizarre, but, I mean, it's not unheard of. Rhode Island played at Providence when their arena was being built. The campus is only 3 miles away. I don't think Xavier would do much to help them other than to, you know, give them the keys and say, you run the concessions, you run the parking, you run the event, it's your event, but here are the keys. But I the fans don't get along, but I think the university athletic departments do.
I don't know, David. I mean, Rhode Island and Providence, it's a good rivalry, but I mean, you're talking more like, you know, the like Cameron gets shut down and so they go play the games at the Dean Dome for Duke. No, it could not happen.
Well, that would. Where else are they gonna go? I just. They could play downtown. NKU actually is the bank of their arena is really nice, Northern Kentucky. It's across the river, but it's actually only about 5 or 10 miles away, and it could be a good deal for Northern Kentucky if they could get a little bit of a home and home out of it for letting Cincinnati use their arena for a couple of years. It's probably I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, there is going to be a little bit of tension if they go to U.S. Bank Arena downtown because U.S. Bank Arena was also proposing some renovations of their own, provided they could get UC as their primary tenant. But once they announced that they were going to get renovations going forward for Fifth Third Arena, that deal fell through the window.
Yeah, Cincinnati has a lot of empty, unused arenas in that city.
On that note, let me run through each of you, go through if there's any other topics we want to discuss tonight. Let me start with you, Matt. Is there anything else you want to discuss at this point?
I think I'm pretty good for now. I think anything else, I might chip in if you anyone else has some thoughts. But
all right. Well, before we get to our final thoughts, just want to make sure that we cover our topics. And John T, you're smiling over there. We've got to get your mute off again. But here we go.
Yeah, we got a little bit of feedback, John. That's why we keep muting you.
Check, check, sibilance. So, no, I think that you mentioned Louisville. I just want to focus on the team on the court, regardless of all the off-court stuff.
Right.
So they bring back Mankok Mathiang, who only played 10 games before he broke his foot in December. They're projected to be a top 25 team thanks to the Penn Ivy League transfer, Tony Hicks. The non-conference schedule looks brutal. Kentucky, Indiana, Purdue, they're in the battle for Atlantis. They don't know who they're playing yet, but it includes the Spartans, Wichita State, the aforementioned Baylor Bears, and VCU. And, of course, the crown jewel of the schedule, a trip to the Lokes.
Oh. You mentioned Kentucky briefly here. I just want to throw out a little piece of news that came out the last few days here. And a former Kentucky coach, I just want to give some congratulations to Billy Gillespie, who got back into the coaching game last year with a junior college and promptly was announced as having played an ineligible player all season and is going to have to vacate every single win they had last year. So I want to throw some congratulations out to our old friend there.
Are we approaching Isaiah Thomas level of damaging? I mean, there's as much fun as we have with Frank Haith and, oh, God, the guy's name escapes me, the former Georgia Tech, George Mason.
Oh, Paul Hewitt.
Yeah. I mean, how they continue to fall upwards. Isaiah Thomas is on a whole new level. He wrecked the entire Continental Basketball Association. He kind of wrecked the Pacers. He was run out of town at the Knicks. The guy got Florida International, I think it was, on APR trouble. The guy should come with a Surgeon General's warning. Is Billy Gillespie to that level yet?
I think the New York Liberty dodged a big bullet by not having Isaiah Thomas in their front office.
Yes, and Hoops HD dodged a big bullet by not including him on our panel.
Right. Well, we'll work on next year. He may be looking for a job. But John S., I know you had one other topic you wanted to hit tonight. Let me throw it over to you.
Oh, yes. If you notice my subject line, this was also going to be my final thought. Okay. DePaul is also going to be moving into a new arena downtown for the 2017-18 season. When they announced the Demon Deck, where their student section was going to be located, it turns out it's going to be behind the basket on the upper deck. Name me one other major program that has their student section in the upper deck, miles away from the playing floor.
I loved the press release, how they justified it. It offers a better elevated view of the court. Yeah.
Okay. Can't even figure that one out. David, do you have any other topics you want to discuss, though?
Well, something to just kind of banter about. The Big 12 had their spring meeting, and they discussed expansion and going out to 12 or maybe even out to as many as 14 teams. As far as I know, they've kind of tabled it again. They haven't said that they've decided that they won't, but they're not going to do it anytime soon. It is a fascinating development. Texas is against expansion pretty vehemently, from what I understand. But the Texas Board of Regents, who governs the school and the entire state of Texas, is for it because they want Houston in. Oklahoma, I believe, favors expansion, but the Oklahoma Board of Trustees is against it. Just the contrasts all across the board. And then you have the element of the Longhorn Network, the element of a college football playoff, and then who would the other candidates be? I mean, the ones you hear the most about are Houston, Cincinnati, Memphis expressed interest, Colorado State expressed interest, although I can't imagine them being a serious one, and then, of course, UConn. Selfishly, I really wish I kind of like it in a 10-team format for basketball. I think it's one of the more exciting conferences, and other than the Big East, it's really the only multi-bid league that plays a true round-robin, but I don't know. Would you like to see schools like Cincinnati, Memphis, UConn get into a league like that?
Don't forget a school like BYU, if the Big 12 can convince them to jump out of the ranks of the independent and into their conference, because they probably have the biggest brand name of all the schools you've mentioned from a football point of view.
They do. They also have their own network, which I think logistically BYU is complicated.
Well, I kind of agree with David that from a basketball standpoint, I love the 10-team conference. But John T., let me ask you, do you agree that do you like the 10-team conference for basketball, or do you think it's the 12 or the 14-team conference that's the way to go?
I suppose that if I had to pick between those options, I like 10 only because that gives more chances for other teams to go to other conferences and get an auto bid, but I fear it might be inevitable that we're heading for four separate 16-team conferences, but we'll hold off on that because that will ruin my entire night if that happens.
Okay. Then we won't go there. And instead, let's run through some final thoughts. Now, team, let me start with you.
Yeah, I see some transfers, and what I forgot to bring up, I think Marcus Lee at California, he could be a really good big man for the 1 year he'll be on campus. He's a kid who, like, I always watched in Kentucky. You knew that he was fourth or fifth option, but I think has the skills where if he's second or third option in offense, and I think he's a defensive tear, could be huge for Quadzo Martin reinvigorating a class that, like, they're going to need a lot of people in that class. And so having Marcus Lee as a foundation will be good for them.
Good point there. John T., any other thoughts from you? Oh, we lost you again. Okay.
Yes, I do. We talked about transfers earlier. One I want people to keep an eye on is Canyon Berry, son of Hall of Famer Rick Berry, going from Charleston to Florida. I got to see the Gators' final game last season when they lost by this much to a GW team that won the NIT. They bring him back some good talent and a great coach in Mike White. Berry is unlike most transfers. He was a 2016 Academic All-American. He got a 4.0 GPA while studying, you guessed it, nuclear engineering. And, oh, by the way, he scores like 20 points a game. He had some injuries. I mean, I think this is going to be a very unique but possibly great fit in terms of he'll have a great team and a great conference and a great coach. He's got the great bloodlines. I'm very interested to see how he fits in Gatorland.
John S.
Well, it looks like for the second year in a row, we're going to have a relatively quiet year in terms of realignment because once the academic year ends and Coastal Carolina finishes in the College World Series, they'll be off from the Big South over to the Sun Belt, and we'll also have Northern Kentucky fully eligible for the NCAA tournament for the first time this year. Hopefully, we can also get the Lopes waiver going in time for the 2016-17 season.
Yeah, Lopes.
David, any thoughts on that note?
yeah, just getting back earlier to, like, kids that transfer when they shouldn't, kids that leave early when they shouldn't, they're getting bad advice. There's one person and one person only they should be listening to, and that is me. I should be the one that advises everyone on everything. I keep telling you this. People just need to listen to me.
The final comment I want to make is that we have seen in the last 5 to 10 years a lot of basketball being played in the city of Las Vegas. We've seen a ton of it from conference tournaments that are there, regular season. We now have a new arena coming into Vegas, and already a few basketball events have been announced for there. I'm waiting for the time when all of our conference tournaments are just going to be played in Las Vegas, but they now have the T-Mobile Center going in, which will be the home of their new NHL franchise, and already college basketball events. You know, I mean, maybe we should just play every college basketball game in Las Vegas.
Well, that's where our tournament's going to be, isn't it?
I thought we were putting on an aircraft carrier.
Don't forget the Vegas 16 minus 8.
We're doing it on an aircraft carrier, but we're doing it in Vegas.
Oh, okay. We'll have more news about that next month on the podcast. This is huge news, and we are actually forming a Hoops HD basketball tournament, still in the preliminary stages. We're also going to talk about some of the coaching changes next time, but I do want to thank everybody for joining us. And on that note, have a great evening, everybody, and we'll talk to you again sometime in July.